Writing things on sticky notes, writing a verse on a sticky note, something that you want to remember and you put where you can see it. Just a huge fan of sticky notes. Feel free to use the pink pads for sticky notes because I don't have separate sticky notes. But we're going to talk about, do you have a heart condition? Have you ever been to Disney World, the Magic Kingdom, or Universal Studios, or Busch Gardens, Six Flags? For you old folks, Rocky Point. Okay. All right. And you had to stand in those endless lines with your children all sweaty, and you couldn't wait to get up to the front of the line, right? And you get to the front of the line, and what do you see? A sign that says, do not ride on this ride if you have a heart condition. And you're like, well, I have a little high blood pressure. I'll be okay. Or like, oh, man, I've waited all this time with my sweaty, whiny kids to get on this ride, and now I can't go because I have a heart condition. So we're going to talk about heart conditions this morning. You don't want to feel defeated when you get to the start. You want to be able to get on that ride and go, right? When I was first developing this talk, it was last fall, and I was gangbusters, and we were ready to go. We were going to have a girls' night out, and it was going to be great. And life got in the way, right? Life got in the way. My mom was pretty sick and at the end of her life, and we just couldn't pull it off. But then our theme was take the leap. So we've been trying to convince ladies that it's okay to step outside your comfort zone, take a leap forward, and go for it for the Lord in terms of service or whatever. And we even hinted that year we'd take the leap theme at maybe getting together a group of women that might like to do a parachute jump. But I have to say I didn't get a lot of response for that. Amber would have gone. Carrie would have gone. Okay, well, maybe we'll try it again, a replay. But I thought it would be fun to all go over to the Newport Airport, and those of us that wanted to go up would go up, do a tandem jump. Those on the ground that didn't want to go up could be screaming and yelling for us. We were going to be able to take the leap. But we kind of never got there either, and I'm sorry for that. I apologize to all you leapers. But life circumstances gets in the way. This year, building on the Take the Leap, we went into a new theme called Keeping Your Eyes on the Prize. And it seemed like the next best thing to go because we wanted to apply action to what we do. We wanted to apply intention to what we do as women and as people that are trying to serve the Lord. We think about, especially in this Olympic year, what does it take for an athlete to keep their eyes on the prize? Do they just sit home and not do anything and just expect to go to Paris and get a gold medal? No, right? They work real hard. They have formulas, and they really have to work at it. And so our theme verse for this year is found in Philippians 3, verse 14, and it reads, I press toward the goal and for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. So what does that really mean? And what does it mean in real life? What does it mean in day-to-day practice? And what formulas do we use to get there? So we're going to talk about a little bit about that. And then talking about coincidences, you know, if you believe in coincidences, great. I don't. I believe that everything happens when it happens. So just 2 weeks ago, my mom's cousin down in New Jersey passed away. And I was down there with her, I'll go through the whole hospice thing. We're getting ready for her funeral, and I'm thumbing through a picture book that I had assembled for her. And one of the things I had cut out of her high school yearbook. Now, the woman was 88, and she saved everything. I'm not lying when I say everything. So her high school yearbook page was, so I cut out the little thing at the bottom that said ambitions, and I hadn't really read it. I just sort of cut it out and pasted it in when I was assembling the book. And when I did that, what she had on her life's ambition was to always serve the Lord, and she put that verse on. I pressed toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. And I went, there are no coincidences. So it was a pretty cool thing to have happen. All right, so factors when you're training for the Olympics, hurdles to overcome, literally, the hurdlers, and figuratively, how many years of rigor and training, and how often did they fail? How did they pick up the pieces and move on to finally get on that medal stand and get that medal? So Our lives and journeys may never make the nightly news. We're not going to be on the cover of a magazine saying, look at you in Paris winning a gold medal. But the principles are similar, so we're going to talk about that. And I would venture to say that the inner core of athletes is fueled by that intention. And emotionally, their heart has to be in it to win it. So we're going to kind of follow that a little bit. So let's talk about our hearts. They're the core of our being, right? The driver of our bodies. We can talk about all the organs in our body that are important, but without the heart beating effectively, the other organs aren't going to live, right? So it's kind of the center. It includes our mind, it includes our affections, it includes our will. It's really the center. Just raise your hands. How many cardiologists in the group? Cardiologists? None. Oh, good. So you won't be too critical of my teaching this morning. All right. So let's look at how God made it. Okay. So here is a picture of a heartbeat. So those of you that are nurses may know this stuff. But here's the way God made it. He made us perfect, right? That's a perfect heartbeat. And I'm going to explain the little pieces because as we go into abnormal rhythms, I want you to see who can pick up on that. So this next slide is the P wave. The P wave is when the top part of your heart contracts, right? Boom, P wave. Sends the blood to the bottom. That's the bottom. When the bottom part of your heart responds, all right, it's a much bigger form because it's a much bigger muscle in the bottom part of your heart. And then a little T wave. T wave. Okay, the T wave is that sort of resting phase. So P wave, QRS complex, rest. And that happens, I have the statistics here. In a perfect world, each one of these makes up one perfect cycle, an average of 70 a minute, or 4,200 times an hour, 100,800 in a 24-hour day, and 36,792,000 per year. God made your heart beat perfectly in most circumstances, right? All right, so we're going to now talk about when I was in nursing school, because I'm a nurse, and you take that first anatomy and physiology course. Who's had that A&P course? Yeah, quite a few. And when you were taking that, were you not totally blown away by understanding how God made us, his perfect creation, how much each thing relies on the other, how he built in compensatory mechanisms that things go wrong and this you have that to help you. So it all started back in the garden. So in the garden, there we go. In Genesis 2:7, it says, then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. Now, we could have that old age argument of was it creation or evolution? I'm a creationist, and if you're an evolutionist, please see me after. But I really feel like, you know, it couldn't have, this isn't coincidence. There's no coincidence. Very intentional the way God made us, right? So then the next reference is in Psalm 139, where we read very famous verses, for you formed my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Just awesome, awesome verses to hang on to. So when things get sidetracked, though, we kind of know that in the world of health, there are sidetracks. We've all had them somewhere along the line. But when sin entered God's perfect world back in the garden, it occurred in direct challenge to his authority, with, of course, an assist from the bad guy, right? An assist from Satan. The father of all lies was in the garden, and he made it happen. So the response to that is in Genesis 3:2-5, the woman said to the serpent, from the tree of the fruit in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or touch it, or you will surely die. But the serpent replied to her, you will not surely die. Your eyes will be opened, and you'll be like God. You'll know good and evil. So on EKG, it might look something like this. So there's an abnormal rhythm. So remember, we looked at a normal rhythm, very regular, Every heartbeat had a P-wave, QRS complex, okay? But now, do you see a P-wave anywhere? No. You just see like a... So that's when your atria, the top part of your heart, is not beating effectively. Now, the top part of your heart also includes the intrinsic, the pacemaker you're born with, the natural heart's pacemaker is in the top part of your heart. So that's also failing. And the top part of your heart is just sort of mushy and not effectively beating. And the bottom part, here, 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 is still beating, but it's irregular. So you can see why people feel off when that happens, right? You can see where there's things that have to have happened. So what are the outcomes when your pacemaker isn't working, when somebody's it's not performing to standard? Complications are going to happen, right, and come in. In a heart patient with this rhythm, when the top part of your heart doesn't beat effectively, the blood just sort of pools and doesn't empty correctly into the lower part, and you develop little blood clots, and that's what causes strokes in people. So that's why we have to take care of atrial fib. We are given freedom to make choices, but we're not free from the consequences of our choices. So this kind of just shows that, you know, the underlying, you're making choices right along, but we're not free. See, this consequences. Now your rhythm's off. All right. In Genesis 3, it says, my notes say read it. So I guess I better do that. In Genesis 3, 16 to 19, it says, to the woman he said, now here are the consequences. I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. We have a childbirth expert here. She sees that all the time. In pain you will bring forth your children. Who's had a baby? Was it really super comfortable? Not, no. Yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. And then Adam said, because you've listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten the tree, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. Ever have thorns and thistles in your garden? Aren't they a pain? Poison ivy? By the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So there were consequences right there, starting that day when the Satan, the evil one, got Eve off the path. All right, another rhythm. You ready? All right, look at this. This is interesting. So remember our rules: a P wave, top, bigger complex, QRS, bottom. And here you have the top, here, 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 here. One's buried in there, here, here, here. A lot, you know, like a lot. A nice regular P wave, a nice regular, like, pacemaker. But something's blocking your pacemaker from getting the impulses to your lower part of your heart. So the lower part of your heart is here, here, here. And so when they're not working together, it's bad, right? So each heartbeat relies on the electrical system to have it be normal. It's the way God made it. When there's a short circuit, it might look like that. We can try to live our lives disconnected to our source, our strength, our power, the way we were perfectly created. But our plans may not be in sync with God's plan. And that's, you know, raise your hand if that's ever happened to you, where you've had times in your life where you're not in sync with the Lord. And so this is what it might look like on EKG, because you're going to be a cardiologist at the end of this. Remember that God can see what you can't. So he can see your past, present, and future. So he's very aware of things. He's very behind the scenes. And he's just big enough that he understands that for everybody in this room. He uses the disappointments and frustrations and storms to shape us and mold our character if we let him, right? And so he's good even when you're cranky and even when you're pulling in the opposite direction. The treatment for this rhythm is to implant a pacemaker. You implant the pacemaker, you return the rhythm, the block is gone, and you go ahead. And so we have that opportunity with us with the Lord, too. Like, God is in control of that. He wants us to focus on him as the pacemaker of our life, and he'll bring everything back in sync. In Isaiah 41:10, it says, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." He will restore that rhythm in your heart, okay? Your figurative heart. All right, so who's ready for a challenge? Next rhythm. What do we see here? Do we see a P wave? Is that pacemaker working? No. Do we see a QRS complex, the big bottom part of the heart beating? No, we just see a bunch of garbage, right? Garbage marching across. That's called ventricular fibrillation. What are the effects of ventricular fibrillation? They're not good, right? You don't live. So when that's happening, your heart's not pumping blood at all. That's why CPR helps to pump the blood. But when you're in this rhythm, you don't live unless you get out of this rhythm. Okay, when it feels like your life is falling apart, it can feel like this sometimes, like, oh, God, I'm stuck here. I need to be able to get defibrillated, right? Help me get defibrillated. So knowing what you can and cannot change can make the difference. So this is how we treat it. We apply a shock. Who's taken an AED class? A bunch of my ladies here have. Good. So we have an AED right out there. If any of you need it today, we can use it, okay? So here's a picture of what it looks like. Here's the fibrillation. Nothing's happening. And bam, apply the shock. Normal, normal, normal. And that does happen many times, all right? Having been in the ER world for 150 years, I can tell you it happens many times. And I've had people wake up from this and go, wow, what just happened? And they're like amazed, like they know something happened. And then you're like, well, you tried to die, but we gave you a shock, you know. So it's kind of cool. It's real cool, actually. But you can change you, all right? You can't change your past, so you can't change your parents, and you can't change a handicap you've been given or a diagnosis you've been given. You can't get back someone who's died, shy of what happened in the Bible. But you can change you. I think when Jeremiah in the Bible, in the Old Testament, when his world was falling apart, he said in Lamentations 3:40, "Let us examine our ways and turn back to the Lord." Very simple, very easy. He knew they were going in the wrong direction. Turn back to the Lord. Defibrillation. I needed that, right? So things can get messy. Accepting things that you can't change is not easy, but the jolt of that defibrillation can hurt, but it does get you back to reality. All right, so in James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3, he says, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." We have that same power today that James had back in that day and encouraged the church back in that day to have. We have his power. And then Paul in Ephesians says, "I pray that the eyes of your heart, may be enlightened, so that you will know what is the hope of his calling, the riches of his glory, and the surpassing greatness of his power toward us who believe." So it's all there. The heart's there. The fix is there. The power is there. The defibrillation's there. He will bring you back. Let that sink in a little bit. The power of the resurrection. So Christ's resurrection, bringing Lazarus from the dead. The power of that resurrection is yours for the taking. But you don't have to wait till the end of life. You don't have to wait till you're in VFib to take it. You can find that new life anytime, anywhere. Humans can resuscitate each other, but only God can resurrect your heart in terms of your relationship with him. Cool stuff. All right, one last rhythm. What do you see? Oh, there it is. Do you see a P wave? No, do you see a QRS complex? You just see a lot of resting phase there, don't you? What makes us stop in our tracks and pay attention? What do you think happens when you're in this rhythm? Yeah, you're dead, right? You can sometimes reverse it, medically speaking, but most times when you get to this rhythm, that's pretty much it. A few drugs can maybe, depending on the reason for that, you can resuscitate, but it's pretty final in most cases. Jesus was very cool in how he taught us, how he taught his disciples. And when he was teaching in Matthew 25 and informing the disciples about what to expect about him dying, and they weren't understanding what he was saying, and he asked them a few questions. In verse 26, he said, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul?" He was pointing out what happens when we orient our lives and our decisions around our own sinful longings, our own possessions, our own accomplishments. To live this way may mean that you're forfeiting your soul, depending on how you use those. You may feel like you're in asystole, which is the, or asystola, however you want to pronounce it, but in the ER world, it's asystole. Yeah, so there's not a lot of treatment for that once you're here. So what about your heart? The longer I've been around and the more I've studied the word, I'm really convinced that there's a few basics that would ensure that your heart stays as healthy as possible. Now, I promised people in the room that I would not point out that there were items on the table that were not necessarily the best for your heart, but you know what? We're not going to go there. It was a delicious breakfast, and thank you all for bringing those great things. But storms are going to come in your life. You'll have days when your rhythms aren't right. You'll have days when you look like those slides. Days where things just aren't abnormal. Raise your hand if you've never had a day where you didn't feel in sync. Okay, no hands just went up. So in thinking about that, what can you do? What can we do? Well, you can assess the abnormal rhythm, just like the cardiologist you're now becoming, right? So you can assess that. You can look for where's the P wave, where's the QRS complex. But you can start by looking at your personal risk factors. So it's like any doctor would do. They'd say, well, what are your risk factors? You know, do you smoke? Blah, blah, blah. God has given you your heart. He placed all the passions, desires, and dreams in them that you have. But allowing them to be misused not only breaks his heart, but it can break yours and make your heart very miserable in the journey. So after you assess for your risk factors, then you look for obstacles. What are some obstacles? And so when you think about those treasures that we have on earth that we love, the things that we love a lot, the things that we're chasing after, and Lindsay will understand this when I say, why do we do the things that we do? And the answer is because we want what we want. And we've heard a speaker lately that talks about that. Our hearts contain all these things, but things can become like an idol in our life. It's not like the golden calf idol in the Old Testament, but things that are so important to you that you think about them more than you think about walking with the Lord or a relationship with God or using your gifts and talents in a different direction. In James chapter 4, he says, "What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members?" James was trying to tell the church at the time about this very thing. Like, there are things in your life that you want more than God, and you go for them. You know, I want a bigger house. I want a nicer car. I want to travel the world. I want to buy a boat. It can be something big like that, or it can be something small that you really treasure more than treasuring your walk with the Lord. So they can become just misdirected. I'm going to give you a sentence, and I want you to fill in the blank. What if blank was taken away from me, would it devastate me? So what is the blank in your life that if it was taken away from you, you'd be totally devastated? Well, just kind of think about that. It's going to be different for each one of us. So what's your treatment plan? Well, the first one is to remember your first love. Okay, so your first love is, you know, when you first meet that person that you know, you love and how much you want to talk to them all the time and how much you want to be with them and going on dates and blah, 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 all the different things that you do when you love somebody like that. You just crave that time with them. And in many cases, when we get very settled in our walk with God, if we are walking with God, we can feel pretty solid in the relationship, but then you don't want to spend as much time as usual. You go about doing other things, so you may not spend as much time nurturing that relationship. But don't ever think that God doesn't want you to keep him first. He's kind of a jealous person. He likes you to keep him first. The first commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, and your strength. And it came to us from the Old Testament in Deuteronomy, and then it's repeated again in the New Testament where they quote the Old Testament. So it's such an important thing that it just is repeated in the Bible several times. So then you've remembered your first love, and now what you're going to do is recognize any of those idols in your life, the things that you treasure more than a relationship with God. So any troublesome problem can become an idol in your mind. If you consistently think about that thing, whatever it is, whether it's a pleasant thing, an unpleasant thing, but you're dwelling on that more than you think about God, you actually are practicing a subtle form of idolatry. Like I said, you're not carving a golden calf and worshiping it, but that idol, that thing that takes the place in your heart where God should be, is considered an idol. In Matthew 6:21, it says, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." And then we go on to Exodus, the Ten Commandments. What's the very first commandment? It's in verses 3 through 5. God establishes very first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what it is in heaven or above the earth, beneath the earth or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them. I am a jealous God. So he's serious. I mean, it's serious business for him. And then in Psalm 73, David says, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And beside you, I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." So really wonderful sticky note things for you to take home. All right, so what else is in your treatment plan? We've talked about remembering your first love and recognizing the idols, but let's talk a little bit about claiming that gift of grace. What is that gift of grace? Well, when we become a child of God, what does he give us? A huge dose of grace. It's like taking an IV and just like, he sends a lot of grace through your veins. And grace is that gift that enables you to extend that to others and serve him. In Hebrews 4, it says, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. So that gratitude recognizes the goodness of God, whether it's a good day or a bad day, whether you're employed or unemployed, whether the daily news is good or not so good. That's kind of hard in these, you know, like just don't watch the news. Whether you're healthy or whether you're facing a difficult diagnosis, we can face all things with the awareness that God loves us and he's involved in the battle with you. He's not going to let you go into those rhythms alone. He's going to be with you. If you think of a man like Job in the Old Testament, if you've ever heard his story, he lost everything. And he was a man that became grateful despite those circumstances. It's a wonderful example. Hardships should drive us closer to God and his word. They're opportunities to connect more intimately with him. I've watched family members go through things. One of my brothers had lymphoma, and he frankly was pretty close to dying from it when it was diagnosed. And I watched him go to the depths with that and watched him rise above and saw his trajectory and his relationship with God just take off from there. He just felt so close to the Lord in that circumstance. Now I have another brother who they lost a son a couple years ago, and then finds out he's diagnosed with ALS. You know, really difficult circumstances, but I watched them as a couple now not only navigate the grief that they felt from losing a child to now processing what it's going to be to have ALS and all the ramifications of that, and knowing that that's going to be his trajectory and, you know, for the rest of his life. But because of their solid relationship, because they've faced the circumstances, because they've done their homework, they've looked at those trials and said, we're going to move forward with this. God's with us. In Psalm 119, he says, I delight in your law. It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I may learn from your statutes. The law of your mouth is better to me than thousands of gold and silver pieces. So he said it is good for him that he was afflicted. And that's, frankly, very hard to do. Like, oh, thanks for giving me that ALS diagnosis. I'm going to rock it. It's hard stuff. But the closer you stay to that first love, you can prevent yourself from going off the cliff with it. All right, so you're going to accept trials for what they are. You're going to keep your thoughts captive. Our thoughts are, you know, obviously the things we think about, where we spend our time in our mind. Philippians 4:8, wonderful verse, sticky noteworthy. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. So that's, you know, and on a bad day, going back to basics and having some of these verses memorized so you can claim them in those hard times is super very helpful. And then the last thing, so you've accepted your trials, you're keeping your thoughts captive, and now you're going to submit yourself before God. And that's resisting Satan, because he's everywhere. I think every Bible study we've done, we find references of him crouching and roaring and waiting to pounce and just waiting for that chance to get in. It's like when the scammers call you, you know, the phone rings and they're like, oh, we're calling from the blah, blah, blah. You know, they're always there in the wings. So draw near to God. We've got a lot of great references about drawing near to him. Seek his words. The more time you spend, the more you'll appreciate things that are in the Bible. That sense of repentance, like praying about things that you need to confess, that's really important. And then if you feel stuck, maybe it's because you haven't learned how to let go, because letting go is a choice. So in Ephesians 4, it says, throw off your old sinful nature and former way of life, which is corrupted by lust and deceit. Use his power. Get out that paddle. Defibrillate that stuck situation that you're in and gain his power back. So the bottom line, if you haven't placed your faith and trust in God through his son, there's no better day than today, and there's no better time than now. I'm just saying. In John 14, Jesus explains the way to his Father in heaven was through him. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There's no exceptions. So that's the way to get to heaven. You can say, well, he was a really good person, or, you know, you hear that a lot. Well, I know he's in heaven because he was just a great guy. Well, there's criteria, and it's right there. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. And then in Revelation, which is at the very end of the Bible, Revelation 3, Jesus said, look, I'm standing at the door and knocking. If anyone listens to my voice and opens the door, I'll come in and we'll eat together. So he's always there. Our latest Bible study, we've been doing parables. And how many references do we have in the parables to people that come to the door and let me in, let me in. And the person inside says, too late. And you don't want to be the one banging at the door and have the person inside say, too late, can't let you in. So if you are a believer or a Christian who's wandered from God, hear that knock at the door of your life. Jesus is a gentleman. He will let you in, but he's not going to bust the door down to get you in. He wants you, you know, he'll open the door. You have to be intentional about that. So in the talking about parables, in the parable of the lost son or the prodigal son, you might know, in Luke 15, he was still a long way off. He was doing his own thing. He belonged to his father, right? But he was way off. And this is a parable. It's a story that Jesus is using to teach a lesson. So his father sees him a long way off. He's coming back now because he's squandered his inheritance. He's lived in pigsties. He's had a terrible life. and he comes back towards the father. The father felt compassion for him, ran to embrace him, kissed him, called his slaves to bring out the best robe and the sandals, placed that ring on his finger, bring out the fatted calf. He's home. He was lost, but he's found. And they began to celebrate. And that story is so profound that, you know, entire books have been written on it. It's just a wonderful, beautiful picture. But that picture can be there for you if you feel like you're in a position now where you've been sort of lost and far from the Lord. He will always come back to you if you reach out to him. So I'm going to close by playing a song that came to mind when I was working on this presentation. It's by an artist. His name is Crowder, and the words to it will be displayed as he sings it. It's called Come As You Are.
From wherever you've been, come brokenhearted, let rescue begin. Come find your mercy, oh sinner, come kneel. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't heal. Earth has no sorrow that heaven can't heal. So lay down your burden.
So lay down your heart, lay down.
because you are. Let me close us with prayer. Father, thank you so much for being in our presence this morning. Thank you for the privilege of being able to share with these lovely women. Help us as we examine our hearts for abnormalities. Point out our risk factors. Point out our obstacles and the things that prevent us from having a full relationship with you. Thank you that you've given us the treatment plan that gets you back to being our first love, your first love.